am speaking this morning with Ambassador Christopher Hill. He served as ambassador to Iraq, Korea, Poland, Macedonia. He was Assistant Secretary of State for East Asian Pacific Affairs and was a special envoy to Kosovo and a member of the team that negotiated the Bosnian Peace Agreement in Dayton. He is currently the Dean of the Joseph Corbell School of International Studies at the University of Denver. We spoke with the ambassador recently on the Radio Cafe when he visited Santa Fe, but given all of the recent change in Syria, I asked him to come on again to elaborate for Santa Feans a bit of what's happening in the region. Thank you so much, Ambassador Hill, for joining us again on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you very much.
And I apologize if you hear any kind of background noise on it. Now, in our last interview, we mentioned an op-ed in the New York Times that you wrote, When to Talk to Monsters. This was about the need for diplomacy with Bashar al-Assad, Syria's president. And it seems that many of the things that you suggested have occurred. Can you talk about what's happening in Syria now?
Well, I think one of the first things that became clear is not so much in Syria, but in the United States. And that is the fact that many Americans are just tired of hearing about the United States becoming more involved in conflict in the Middle East. And so I think that was an important issue for the Obama administration as it looked to figure out how to enforce the international norm against the use of chemical weapons, how to enforce that. At the same time, how to somehow really leave the situation better off rather than even more risky as a result. And I think it was really a very positive move that Secretary Kerry went to Geneva in what was truly an old-fashioned, high-stakes diplomatic encounter with his Russian counterpart, and they hammered out a deal which would essentially bring Syria into compliance with the International Chemical Weapons Convention and begin a process of destroying their chemical weapons. Obviously, this kind of deal is fraught. That is, there will be disagreements on how many chemical weapons they have, where they are, whether the Syrians have moved them to new hiding places, questions like this. And so it is not going to be easy to enforce this. But what it does is finally reestablish, to some extent, a sort of pattern of cooperation with Russia to see if we can begin to look ahead on what needs to be done in Syria. I'm of the very strong view, people disagree with me, but I'm of the very strong view that more weapons in Syria are not going to solve what is essentially a difficult political problem. What is needed is more diplomacy so that people can figure out what their lives are going to be like in the future. So I hope this agreement reached in Geneva will help. And I'll make one other point, which is Vladimir Putin is not an easy character to deal with. In many respects, one has the impression he's more interested in making our lives difficult than in improving the situation in Syria. I think his own op-ed on the subject of Syria and the United States was indicative of a kind of negative spirit to it. All that said, I think we might want to refrain from Putin bashing right now, because I don't think it hurts him in Russia, and try to actually focus on what needs to be done, albeit with difficult customers. And if people have trouble dealing with Putin, they should recall the United States somehow figured out to deal with a person who was indeed a mass murderer, that is Joseph Stalin.
Now, a lot of people opposed even the idea of a military strike, and it seems that the comments made by Kerry on diplomacy seemed almost accidental. Do you think that this was a strategy that was built? And I do know that even I believe last year they were discussing the potential of diplomacy, but it really felt like that had run out. This kind of accidental, was there something purposeful about this?
Well, I hate to sound like Sigmund Freud, but maybe there are no accidents. That is, maybe Kerry had in his mind the notion of what had been discussed a couple of weeks earlier at the G20 meeting, that meeting that took place among the 20 largest industrial countries in St. Petersburg, that perhaps there might be another way to go, which was to get Syria to surrender these weapons rather than just try to bomb sites and then hope the Syrians don't or others don't react too much. So he may have been picking up on some of these ideas discussed at the G20. Whether it was accidental or not, though, I think it was the right policy, certainly given the mood in the country, the Republican Party very split among its Tea Party supporters who don't seem to be aware that there's a world out there, and then other parts of the Republican Party who never saw a problem they didn't want to get militarily involved in. And so, and also the Democrats also very split between wanting to support the president and wanting to stay out of all kinds of conflicts. So I think it was a very, very difficult political situation for the president to deal with. And I think the decision to proceed with trying to collect these weapons, get them off the battlefield, ensure that they won't be used again, I think was an appropriate one. Plus, I might add, I think it's very important to keep the door open for eventual prosecution of these people who use these weapons and, you know, killed so many civilians. We know of 1,400, including 426 children. Best estimates are there are more such events as well.
Now, UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon has called the use of chemical weapons a war crime, and it does seem that the most recent investigations have pointed to the fact that chemical weapons were used by government forces and not by rebels, as many people tried to tag them for. So in what case, if this is a war crime, can he not be turned over to the War Crimes Tribunal?
Well, I certainly agree with Ban Ki-moon. I mean, these are weapons that not even the Nazis used against Allied armies in World War II. So I think to suggest it's a war crime to use them, I think is accurate. The issue is, how do we get from here to trying to apprehend people who did this? I think as a first step, we need to try to calm the violence on the ground. I don't think there's any stomach in the international community for trying to arrest Assad, and I don't think we have any means to do that. And to brand him a war criminal at this point, I think makes it even more difficult to bring him into some kind of peace process. My own view is he cannot have a future in it, but if you put that out there as a condition precedent to talking to him, he's not going to talk. The people are usually not interested in taking part in negotiations whose purpose is to destroy them. So I think the issue is to try to get something going, and then at an appropriate time, having kept that issue open, I think we can look at the culpability of those who, you know, killed, really murdered these children with poison gas. And I don't think that can be forgotten, and I think it needs to be taken up at some time.
Well, and Russia certainly supports Assad and still even denies their responsibility in the chemical attack. So we're beginning to negotiate with Russia. It seems that Obama's also exchanged letters with Iranian President Hassan Rouhani. So this is a big opening here. Can we expect some kind of warmer relations even with Iran? This was another thing you mentioned in our last conversation.
I think it's very necessary. I think it's important to be prepared to negotiate with people you don't like. And by the way, people who don't always tell the truth. I think one of the most laughable parts of the Putin op-ed to the American people was when he said that against all evidence and without any evidence of his own, that somehow this was a provocation, that is, the Syrian rebels used these weapons in order to blame the government. I used to hear this kind of stuff in Bosnia every time there was a mortar attack on a marketplace in Sarajevo. The Serbs would always tell us, oh, this is the Muslims mortaring their own people to gain sympathy. So I think that's kind of a ridiculous point of view, but we do need to deal with the Russians. I think the Russians have a better chance of of delivering Assad to the table, if not eventually to justice, than we do. And so I think Russia needs to be a part of it. As for Iran, I think it's very important that with Iran, we need to continue these nuclear negotiations, the so-called 5+1, that is the five permanent members of the UN plus Germany. I think that's very important. But I think the United States really needs to address Iran in a bilateral context as well. We did this with the North Koreans, where we had an overall multilateral framework, but we were also able to talk to them bilaterally. And I think it's very important that we do that. There's clearly a new team in Iran. In addition to the president, there's a very talented foreign minister, Javad Zarif, who's actually one of our graduates here at the Corbell School in Denver, Colorado. Zarif is also the new nuclear negotiator. So I think there's some reason to try to talk to the Iranians. But I think we also have to be cognizant of the fact that in Iran, you have mullahs, you have Revolutionary Guard, you have some really unsavory types alongside some people that we might be able to talk to. So I don't think our foreign minister, our graduate of the Corbell School, is necessarily in charge of weapons deliveries to Assad. So it's a difficult proposition, but I think we ought to try it.
Now, journalist and commentator Christiane Amanpour has, you know, very passionately on television recently called for intervention in Syria on moral grounds. And I remember years ago how she famously confronted Bill Clinton on live TV about intervening in Kosovo. So as an ambassador, when does it become a moral imperative to intervene?
Well, I think morality has a definite role in diplomacy, needs to be a part of our diplomacy at all times. However, I think it needs to, one still has to go through sort of the logical sequences of, okay, we intervened, then what? And so I don't think to be passionate, to use the word you just used, or to approach this with morality is to somehow throw out sort of sequence and you know, the way ahead. So I think we need to know what we're going to do in such an intervention. Now, I think my understanding of Christiane Amanpour's view is that we need to send more guns. There are other people who are not so sure this is the most moralistic way to handle things, although they can also be passionate about it. So I think the problem is we need to keep in mind one thing. If Bashar al-Assad were to be hit by a bus tomorrow, there is still a problem of who is going to govern Syria in the future. Is it going to be this minority tribe known as the Alawites, who are, from the Sunni perspective, apostates in that they don't agree with what the Sunnis believe to be the mainstream notions of Islam? Is that are we going to be able to continue with an Alawite-dominated government? Are we going to go to a one-person, one-vote, in which case you have a flip of Syria from Alawite minority rule to Sunni majority rule, just as in Iraq we had a flip from Sunni minority rule to Shia majority rule. So what kind of system is there going to be? Will there be a parliament in which you'll have one person, one vote, but then maybe an upper chamber to protect the interests of the minorities? I think people need to understand that Christians, Druze, Kurds are all essentially staying away from the Sunnis, if anything, fighting alongside the Assad's army. And it's not because they have any particular affection for Bashar al-Assad, but because they fear a Sunni takeover more than they fear a continuation of Assad's brutal rule. And that should tell you something. That should tell you that people need a clearer understanding of what the political arrangements will be in their country, apart from saying, once the Sunnis take over, we'll have an election. Elections in that part of the world are not really elections in our sense of the word. Elections are more a census. We already know that the Sunnis have a majority there, and therefore they will win any kind of election. So you don't even need the election because you know the results. What you need to know is what are they electing them for, what kind of system will it be.
I am speaking with Ambassador Christopher Hill. He served as ambassador to Iraq, Korea, Poland, and Macedonia, and he's currently dean of the Joseph Corbell School of International Studies at the University of Denver. I know we have just a moment more, but it needs to be said that relatively speaking, fewer people died from chemical weapons than they are on a daily basis from the ongoing fighting, and any of this negotiation is not necessarily going to stop any fighting or stop endless deaths. Is there anything that can be done in the interim?
Well, I think what you try to do is get a political process going so that people will think, do I really want to risk my life today when I know what the future political system will be in my country? Why am I risking my life today when I already know the outcome? So I think you're trying to convince people that you have a political plan. The plan is it's a function of how quickly can you get people on board. And then that takes a little steam out of the fighting. It's not to say it would end immediately, even if there were announcement on a kind of contact group plan, to use the term that we used in Bosnia. It would take a while to be implemented and a while for people to convince that that was indeed their future. But I think it is better than the notion that we can provide more weapons, because I don't think weapons are going to level the playing field. I don't think the provision of small arms is going to help the Sunni rebels defeat the Alawites. If you look at the history of warfare, it's usually not about weapons, it's about will. And the will is often among those who fear annihilation, and I think the Alawites, Druze, Kurds, and Christians fear annihilation. So they need to be convinced that this majority rule will not mean annihilation. So we have a long way to go, but I think it's a good start in Geneva, and I hope it is the basis for some real momentum to a diplomatic process. And I, for one, am very pleased that our Secretary of State embraced this, went out there. You know, it's important to understand in this line of work that there are no sure bets in this. In fact, frankly speaking, there are often a lot of losers. I've been involved with good ones and bad ones. It requires an equal amount of work, an equal amount of passion. But if you believe in what you're doing, and clearly our Secretary of State does, I think we can be hopeful that he's going to try his best to get a good outcome.
And this does not preclude the use of violence if any difficulties arise, is that correct?
Well, again, when you use violence, for example, we used violence in Bosnia, we used violence in Kosovo, but we did it after we had articulated a political plan. So we used violence against rejectionists of the political plan. Right now, there's no real political plan except that Assad should surrender and the rebels should win. And so that is not a basis for using violence unless you just want to take sides in a civil war. So I hope that we will have a political plan. And then if you have rejectionists, for example, if Assad's forces continue to reject what is understood to be a reasonable international plan that involves the Russians and others, then I think absolutely go after them. But military force should be used in the context of a strategy, not as a substitute for a strategy.
Ambassador Christopher Hill, thank you so much for joining us once again. This is a very convoluted situation, but it does seem that we've averted airstrikes for the moment. So I really appreciate you speaking with us about this and coming on once again. I hope you have a wonderful morning, and we are going to take a quick break, and when we return, we will hear from Gershon Siegel about a fundraising event this Saturday in El Dorado. It's a fundraiser for the legal defense of the El Dorado Nine. Thank you so much, Ambassador Hill.